said issue, a public finance bill. We don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to get started anyhow because we've got a lot to do before we get to the floor members. So with that, welcome to the committee, Representative Shemansky. This is House File 102. We'll move it when we can. We can't yet. We don't have a quorum. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to present the City of Winsted. We have today with us Mayor Steve Stotko from the City of Winsted and City Administrator Brent Merrick. They've also brought their bond council along. The City of Winsted is planning on building a new city hall. They need some special legislation to increase their levy limit to finance the new project. And I'll let Administrator Merrick take over.
Welcome. If you could speak into the mic. We need you at the mic or you're not on the tape. So come on and have a chair and welcome to the committee. We appreciate you being here. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Brent Merrick, City Administrator for the City of Winsted. Our community has been working on this project since October of 2004. We had the Minnesota Design Team come into our community, not really knowing what the outcomes would be, but we had 200 people come to kind of a community planning charrette. And the big piece to that puzzle that we talked about was our downtown. We've been without a city hall space for about 10 years now. Our old city hall building in 1896 had some mold and water issues. And there's also this space that you see in this picture right here, right along Winsted Lake in our downtown, that a lot of people have said is one of the most important things about our community. In the background there, you'll see our existing public works garage, which is sitting on the City Hall site, which we hope to construct. And this was the vision of that Minnesota Design Team visit back in October of 2004. And so for the past 3 years, we've been having all members of our community, new residents, old residents, youth, senior citizens, and all different sorts kind of put their stamp on this project. And so as we've developed it, the site plan. You can see a little mini amphitheater in our park area, reorganized parking and landscaping. We have some rainwater gardens to help take up a lot of the sediment that goes into Winsted Lake, and then our city center. And this is our front view of the building. You can see the glass area there. People have said that the lake is the most important part of the community, and so we wanted to have a building that represented that. And then along with the rear view, you can see there will be community rooms in the lower level. Right now there aren't many spaces other than a dentist basement for meetings and church basements. And so we're hoping to have the American Legion, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, or Lake Association use that room. Right now we don't have a room in our city offices that would accommodate that. And so this is the plan then showing the what we're calling the lakefront promenade all the way down to the city center. And then putting this project together, a big piece of this for our community, and I'm sure a concern to you as well in your positions, are taxes. And the City of Winsted, our city council, has done a fantastic job of putting this together. Basically, this project is being funded by retired bond debt that the city has, and so a project that probably would be unfeasible for a community our size has really become something that our community has really grabbed a hold of. We had a big town hall meeting last year, and we had overwhelming support for this project, as in a community our size, to put a project like this together and have a big pocket of opposition really is not something that our city council or our community is really looking forward to. But it's gotten to the point of, you know, when is it going to get started? People are that excited about it. And we were in this position last year. We found out kind of at the 11th hour, and this is why we're here before you today, is that our net debt doesn't allow us to do this project. And so through Senator Dillon, Representative Newman at the time, tried to get this approved last year, but just weren't able to make the presentations and got caught up in conference committee. And so I've been working with Representative Shemansky and Senator Dill to present this early in the session. And so I'm here to answer any questions that you might have. And we also have Mary Ippel, who's our bond counsel, who can answer any technical questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And I think I got to hear some of this testimony in local government as well, so we appreciate you being here. Did you want to testify as well?
Not if I don't have
You're not required to, but we might have questions for you. Are there questions for Representative Szymanski? Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify either for or against? Okay, we can't take action, but Representative Szymanski, I wanted you to know and I want the committee to know what we're doing here today, except one bill, is we're going to lay them all over for possible inclusion in the omnibus public finance bill. So they will all travel together is the intention of this group today if committee members feel this is worthy of getting into the omnibus public finance bill. So I wanted you to know that we don't yet have a quorum or we can move it now. I do have to say, I have a question though. So Winstead really came into being because of a soap factory, is that correct? And that was the original, I'm reading this, all this great information, you weren't there? Well, we appreciate you providing it to us, it's very interesting. What is the population of Winstead?
We're just under 2,400, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. If there are no other questions or comments, members, when we can move this light over, we will. And so we appreciate you coming down and sharing with us those renderings, very beautiful building proposed. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you.
With that, we're going to take up, is Representative Hornstein here? Representative Hornstein has House Bill 2391, and again, we don't yet have a quorum, so we're not going to move it. But Representative Hornstein is carrying the Metro Transit bonding bill, and that is historically always carried in the omnibus public finance bill by the Tax Committee. So, Representative Hornstein, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and another bit of history. If folks are kind of wondering about this bill, it's traditionally been bipartisan, and in the past, Representative Abrams has carried it before this committee, I think at least since 2000 when I was on the Met Council. So this is legislation that provides for bonding for various metropolitan transit functions, primarily park and rides, fleets are the top two, and I think another important note about this is that this bonding is also for opt-outs and really any transit provider in the seven county region. So with that, members, I have Arlene McCarthy, who's the Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services with the Met Council, and she can amplify a few of the points that I made. So
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I think that Representative Hornstein summarized it very well. This is very critical funding for the region. One important use of this regional transit capital is that it serves as local match for our federal dollars. So, for example, when we purchase fleet or construct a park ride using federal dollars, there's always a minimum 20% local match required by the FTA for those projects, and that is one of the key uses for this. Again, fleet is a primary use of the funds. We use this money to purchase buses for Metro Mobility for the community-based providers around the entire Seven County Metro, and then for the suburban providers in Metro Transit, all of their fleet needs. And as Representative Hornstein said, park and rides are a huge use of this money, often matching federal dollars. And then also basic facility repair, roofs and things like that. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Are there questions from committee members? Representative Solberg.
Just a little bit of understanding of how are these bonds paid off?
Madam Chair, these are property tax-based bonds.
Further questions from committee members? Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify either for or against House File 2391? If not, I appreciate you being here this morning. We're one member shy of a quorum, so we can't move it yet, but if we will when we've got someone. So thank you, Representative Hornstein, and this will be laid over when we can for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Public
and
finance bill. Thank you. Let's see. We have Representative Dill as House File 617. Representative Dill, are you ready to do House File 617? Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Jeske. From Lake Trout to indebtedness. She was questioning me on Lake Trout this morning. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 617 for the committee.
We don't have a quorum yet.
So we're just
going to hear it until we do. We're waiting for one more body to show up. So, Representative Dill, tell us about what Crane Lake means.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, members, Crane Lake, it happens to be my home community. About 100 people live there. And we recently became, I think we're still the newest township in the state. And that happened several years ago. One of the reasons for the incorporation of the township was to do some civic things, one of which is to do a land exchange between the U.S. Forest Service, a private party, and the town of Crane Lake. One of the things that the to finance the portion of the land exchange so that we'll have some land to build a community hall, community center on, is to do this land exchange with the U.S. Forest Service. Imagine Crane Lake. The community of Crane Lake is an island surrounded by the U.S. Forest Service land. Almost all of the land, or nearly all of the land around the community, is owned by the U.S. Forest Service, so we have no elbow room at all and no place to build any public facilities of any magnitude. So the purpose of this bill is to allow the township basically to go to the bank and borrow the money to fulfill the end of their part of the transaction, and then to pay it back over a period of time with interest, not to exceed $225,000. It's a very simple thing. This avoids this particular provision avoids the township from doing bonding. And then when you do bonding, you have to have a bond council. You have to have all types of different provisions and expenses that they can avoid by doing it this way. This is basically like getting a house, allowing the township to get a house mortgage backed by the full faith and credit of the township, except for it's going to be the collateral will be the land. It's not very remarkable, actually.
Thank you for that. Are there questions for Representative Dill? Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify either for or against House File 617? Nobody came down from Crane Lake?
Oh, Madam Chair, we've got two. We have two folks up here in the audience from Crane Lake. They came down here because I told them this was going to be a very exciting and enlightening hearing with a lot of good questions and discussion. And I really don't want to let them down, Madam Chair, if we could, you know, hammer away.
Well, Representative Dill, how did they get here? They fly? Did you fly
no,
down?
No, I think
or?
They drove down
they
last
drove.
Night to Kelly Inn.
And how long of a drive is that, Representative Dill?
265 one way.
Wow. Well, we really appreciate you coming down, and we know how important this is to Crane Lake, so we really appreciate that you're here. Sorry it's not more exciting.
Madam Chair.
Representative Simpson.
Representative Dill, the important thing is the ice off the lake, and is fishing going to be available soon?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, I really don't know. I haven't been home for a month, so I hear that with the pace of the legislature this year, I haven't gone home on the weekends, but I hear it is, and right. You can actually get a boat out to my house now, I guess.
Good.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Carlson is thinking that maybe we should move the bill and ask for a roll call and just kind of painstakingly go through it for you, for your guests. And Representative Dill, we do now have a quorum, so Representative Dill moves House File 617 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Public Finance Bill. And if there's no one else, members, I will lay over House File 617 for possible inclusion. Thank you for that. And Representative Dill, if we can just hang on a second, I'm also going to take Representative Simpson's motion on House File 102. That was Representative Szymanski's bill. And so he moves that, and I will now lay that over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Public Finance Bill. Representative Carlson moves House File 2391. That was Hornstein's bill for Metro Transit, and I will lay that over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I also see that Representative Solberg has diligently read the minutes of House the 20th, the 23rd, and the 24th.
I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and thought about it, and I came back in and thought
it. We appreciate that. Is there discussion to the minutes of the 20th, the 23rd, or the 24th? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. And so now, Representative Dill, we can go to House File 2294. Representative Dill moves that to the floor. Members, this is not a public finance bill. This is actually a property tax issue. The property tax division is done, and the tax bill is gone, and it's off the floor, so this has to travel separately. And so there is not a cost in this, so it will just go directly to the floor if we voted out of here. So, members, Representative Dill moves House Bill 2294 to the General Register. Representative Dill.
Thank you very much, Chair Lencheski, members. The hospital and nursing home is located about halfway between Virginia and International Falls, about a 90-mile stretch with the hospital in the middle. As you know, in my district, this is a very rural area. Since 1990, the community has had, or the hospital district, which is about 2,500 square miles, encompasses a couple of cities, many townships, part of unorganized St. Louis County. They have been being taxed at a rate of 0.0063, of which 0.0015 of that goes to the two ambulance services that are within that same taxing district and in that same hospital district. The purpose of this bill is to remove the 0.0063 restriction and allow additional levy on that area. That levy could not exceed the amount required for expenses under the general provisions applicable to hospitals. That's in current law. If this provision is to move forward, the 0.0015% of the total levy would continue to go to the ambulance services, which are both owned by, one ambulance service is owned by the city of Cook, one by the city of Orr, and they're both volunteer services. The bill that the current law that is in place today allows the tax revenue to only be spent on capital improvements. The new provision would allow, again, for the general expenses that are allowed to other hospitals. This is each of the community's member to belong to the Cook Hospital District. Let's take a township, for example. A township must pass a resolution that then opts them into this township, into the township, into the hospital district, into the taxing area. If they don't adopt the resolution, then they are not assessed the tax. So it's an opt-in provision, and they would also be able to opt out if they so wished. In the community of Orr, where I used to be the city administrator, the city, while I was the administrator, opted in by resolution, and they will have the same consideration if they don't, if they think this is an unwise move.
Are there questions for Representative Dill? Representative Simpson.
Maybe this question is from Mr. Michael. Mr. Michael, have we had this happen in other situations where we have hospital districts that have open-ended opportunities to do this, or are most of them on a cap levy?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, the general law that would normally apply to one of these hospital districts under Chapter 447 really does not have a percentage restriction on the amount of the levy. Rather, it's just limited to the amount of the expenses of constructing and operating the hospital. This Crane Lake situation, they enacted a special law with this, you know, this sort of as Representative Dill described, and as a condition of that, the legislature at the time when it did it back in 1988 decided, perhaps at the request of the locals, to put this cap on it that would apply so that it's more restrictive than what the general law is that would normally apply. I don't know if there may be other hospital district special laws that cap them, but the general rule is there's not a cap.
Thank you for that, Representative Simpson. Are there other questions for Representative Dill?
And Madam Chair, we have in the audience, I have the board chair, Mr. Hall, and board member, Mrs. Pearson, and the administrator, Mr. Vogt, if there are any specific questions about, you know, how this works. But as Mr. Michael said, there is, you know, this is, how can I say this? This is not an unlimited, as I understand it, it's not an unlimited levy amount that it has to do with the general expenses. The limitation is the general expenses of operating a hospital. And that is the same as other hospitals have in terms of their levy authority. And if that's not quite right, I'd be like to hear that from Mr. Michael. I think that's correct.
Did Mr. Hall want to join us? I don't know who that is, but come on down if you'd like to. Another person who gets extra credit for traveling far.
Right.
Yep, Madam Chair, they're about 225, I'd say.
225. I have a feeling that Representative Dill kind of has all the markers in his mind on the mileage after driving it so many times. Welcome, Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall, did you want to share any comments with us?
Well, I think the thing to consider in changing the levy limit is we're a small hospital. We have an attached nursing home to it that was built in the mid-50s. If you look at our operation today, we are basically a break-even operation with our hospital and lose a modest amount of money with the nursing home. And sooner or later, the community will have to wrestle with the problem of how we rebuild or remodel the nursing home. If we look at that problem today with the levy limits we have imposed upon us, it gives us very, very limited opportunity to address the problem at all. I would think as things exist today, if we had to put $5, $6 million in a nursing home, I think our choice would be clearly to close the nursing home. I would suspect that's not the wishes of the community. And changing the levy limits, as we're proposing to do, at least gives us the opportunity to discuss options, which we don't have today. And that's why I would encourage you to approve the changes that have been requested by Representative Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Representative Solberg.
I know that Big Fork has a hospital district that I think was established by law in the boundaries of it. Does this one have an opt-in or out, or is there a district boundary lines that would have to have come back to the legislature to be able to change those boundary lines?
Representative Dill.
Well, it does have a district and a boundary line, but all the communities within the boundaries of that are opt-in or opt-out at their discretion by a majority vote of the board of that particular. Pick a particular township. They can opt in or opt out by a resolution of the board.
Representative Solberg.
Maybe this is Commissioner Michael. Is that a typical of when we establish these type of things? Because if you have the taxing authority and all of a sudden it shrinks, the taxing authority basis becomes small, and I would think that I thought in the Big Fork when it was established, and it was established by law, and this defines the hospital district as opposed to an opt-in or out. I may be wrong in that. But,
Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am not that familiar with this hospital district law. It does have provisions that allow annexing or adding territory and detaching or removing territory. Now, it's the usual situation that before any of that was done, they issued general obligation bonds, for example. You could not sort of then have a number of towns say, okay, we're going to pull out and the rest of you will have to pay for this debt. So there's usually a provision that essentially said the debt levies will continue until that debt is paid off to preserve the security for the holders of the debt. Right. And this law, as Karen has just found, does have a provision like that. So to the extent that it's you need to break the levy into two components, the part that's for operations of the hospital they can opt out of, but for the portion that goes to pay the debt, that they could not opt out of. And once the debt's retired, then that levy wouldn't apply against the part that's detached.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just one other thing. How does the hospital obtain bond debt? Do they have to come, or hospital district, do they have to come back to the legislature to obtain bonding debt? Or can they just continue?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, these entities are special taxing districts with authority to incur debt, and so they don't. It's not like the Met Council transit bonds where they would come and say, you know, give us some authority to do it. They've got authority to incur debt, and so by, you know, decision of the board that governs the hospital district, they could incur debt.
Thank you for that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dill.
Well, the one thing that is very nice about this hospital is, to my knowledge, they've never incurred any bonding indebtedness. They've always used the pay-as-you-go method to finance their operations when it came to their income and expenses and their income from this levy. And also, Madam Chair, I'd like to say that in our little small communities, as Representative Solberg knows, one or two newspapers covers the whole community, all of the, you know, the area, and this has been well covered and publicized, this particular bill, in the local newspapers, and I have not received, now as soon as I say this I'll get one, but I have not received a single communication for or against this proposal from any township or any citizen that is affected by this particular proposed provision. Now let them start coming tomorrow. I said that on the House floor, Madam Chair, about something about minnows. As I'm sure you remember the minnow debate, and my email lit up like a Christmas tree for 2 days. So now we are ready for the emails from home.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Hall, for being here. Seeing no other discussion, we're going to vote on this one to the general register. All those in favor of House File 2294, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The bill is passed and sent to the general register. Thank you. Thank you for coming down, Mr. Hall. Appreciate that. I don't know where Representative Hillstrom is, so I guess we're going to look for her. And I think maybe if we could, Mr. Michael, I have not asked you about this, but if I think the best way to deal with the public finance bill that I have, oh, Representative Hillstrom's here now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you be prepared to just walk in and do your bill for us, Representative Hillstrom? Okay, so Representative Hillstrom, if the page could bring her House file 1160. Representative Hillstrom moves House File 1160 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Public Finance Bill, and we're going to get the materials in front of you, Representative Hillstrom. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to turn it right over to my testifier.
Okay.
And so that's all I have to do.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Boards Association. I'm speaking today on behalf of the School Board Association, the Association of Counties, and the League of Cities on this bill. This bill is a result of a collaboration between those three organizations and the legislative auditor and the state auditor. And it's supported by those groups. It's also, I know that many of you have already heard this bill because it's been to local government and to K-12 and to GovOps and state government finance and the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. So I'm going to try to be relatively brief in my explanation today. Last year, the Attorney General's office said that we could not create trusts, that we would put funds in for retiree health insurance. They said we didn't have the authority. This bill allows us to create those trusts. It allows us to invest the money that's in those trusts at a higher rate than we can for the short-term investments that municipalities make. And it grandfathers in all the existing trusts that were created when we believed that we had the authority. As I say, this is really for retiree health insurance. To the extent that you can invest these funds at a higher rate, it reduces your liabilities. This is exactly the same thing you did with Duluth when you passed their OPEB bill earlier this session. This is the same concept, but this is the statewide bill. The bill allows for three different options to use as a trust administrator. You can either use PERA, or you can use a bank with trust powers, or you can use an insurance company or agency that's experienced in this type of work. The reporting language that's in here is the reporting language that was requested by the state auditor's office. The bill allows for the money that's in the trust to be invested the same way that we do for covered pension plans. So it would be done that same way. It allows for revocable or irrevocable trusts. If you have a revocable trust, you can take the money out if there's three or four different things. There's a change in the law. There's a change in the situation in your community. For instance, if you made, if the federal government came in and made, did universal health insurance or made, lowered the Medicaid age to, Medicare age to 55, this would allow them to take the money out to the extent that it exceeded 100% of their requirement. Otherwise, you have the money put away irrevocably. That's their choice. The end of the bill provides that this is subject to regular trust law. These are treated as trusts. They're not subject to the claims of the state or the political subdivisions or the trust administrator. And then the last section of the bill validates the 30-plus trusts that were established already and were already in place before the Attorney General's office said that there was no specific authority to create these trusts. I think that's a thumbnail sketch, and I can answer more specific questions if you have some.
Thank you, Mr. Deans. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a memo here to Representative Kahn from the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. I don't know. Is that in all of your packets? Correct. None of these items were adopted in the Pension Commission. One of the things that we've been arguing all along is this is a really important thing to get done, and many of these items would make it so much of a barrier to actually having these trusts happen. That at this point we are hoping for House File 1160 as the language stands. It is has been passed through the Tax Committee in the Senate in this fashion.
Great. Members' questions, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, did you say this didn't pass the Pension Commission or didn't go there, or what was that? I didn't understand that.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mullery, it was heard in the Pension Commission. Senator Betzel is the author in the Senate, and so they did it as a discussion on the Pension Commission. It is also currently in the state government finance bill already. The problem is it is in the tax bill in the Senate, and leadership is currently negotiating whether it will be conferred in the tax bill or if it will be conferred in the state government finance bill. So we need to have it heard in both places so that we make certain that wherever that lining up happens that they've heard the bill and they are aware of the issues.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Tom Deans.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that they could withdraw when they're over 100% of needed, quotes, needed amounts. Now, I've seen, I guess, I know we do that with some of the pensions. Aren't we, and I just came in on this, but aren't we talking about more than just, we're talking about other benefits than pensions here. Is this only the pensions, or?
Madam Chair, Mr. Mullery, this is only, actually, it's only retiree health insurance.
Well, that's what I thought. It's not pensions.
Not pensions at all. Okay. This is not a pension issue.
That's what I thought. And, Madam Chair, and that's why I was concerned. How far are we going to keep doing this? Because we get in trouble, and I don't intend to change the pension language we have on that, but now we're going to start in a new way on health insurance and maybe other benefits that we might do this, because when you let them get the extra over 100%, then suddenly, you know, there's a reason for it given at a certain amount. That's because it's up and down and cyclical, and when they get under, then you get in trouble and we have to put some more money back, or somebody has to put some more money back. So I'm wondering why we're starting out on a new thing. I agree with this, the general thing that Duluth had. I think it's a concern to me to let the over 100% add a moment in time out, because I've seen the problems that have been caused for pensions from that.
Madam Chair, the problem here is I was trying to give sort of a capsule explanation. Let me. This is in Subdivision 7 of this, which allows for, if you have a revocable trust, these trusts, the money that's put in the revocable trust has to be used to pay for post-employment benefits. But there are four exceptions that are set out. And if one of these four exceptions comes into place, then you can take out an amount in excess of 100%. The four exceptions are if you have a change in state and federal law affecting the liability, what the liability is. If you have a change in the demographic composition of the number of retirees. Let's say that you're in one of these smaller municipalities and you have five retirees that are covered, and that's who you've created this for, and they're all riding to a meeting and they all get killed in the car crash. At that point, their demographic composition has gone to zero. You don't want to keep that money, have to keep that money for those five in there. Most places are cutting off the ability for these retiree health benefits. They're dealing with this in a different manner. But that would be the second option. The third one is that there's a change in the provisions of the post-employment benefits that are paid, and the fourth is that there's other factors that have a material effect on that political subdivisions or public entities actuarially determined liabilities. There's an actuary that's going to determine what these liabilities are. But if you meet one of those four, you could take the money out of the revocable trust. If you have it, if you've put the money in, if you've taken the option to use the irrevocable trust, at which point you don't have to show it as a liability on your balance sheet, then you can't take the money out until everybody that was in the group is dead.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I guess it doesn't seem that those exceptions are different from some of the problems we've seen created in the others, and so I'm not that fond of that language, to say the least.
The one last point is that it's different than a pension because we're not required to set one of these up, we're not required to fund it, we're not required to do this, and there is no funding in this particular bill. But under GASB 45, which is the accounting standard that's driving all of this out of the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, to the extent that we put the money into an irrevocable trust, then we do not have to carry it on our balance sheet.
If you wanted to read it right now, you could.
But there are, for some of the municipalities, having that money tied up that tight, they're willing to take their chances. They're willing to put it in a revocable trust and explain that to Moody's, and they believe that Moody's will be fine with that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Deans. I think Representative Earhart has a question, and then I know that Representative Kahn is here to testify on this bill as well. So why don't we go to Representative Earhart first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't understand who you represent, sir.
I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Okay. And you made the statement that a higher rate would reduce your liability, and that's a two-edged sword. A higher rate also can increase your liability. You want to earn more money in some kind of a trust here than you can otherwise earn, I guess.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the concept is that right now municipalities can only invest in very short-term obligations. These retiree health costs can be 20 or 30 year runouts, and this would allow us to invest in longer term obligations like you do with a pension plan. And the concept is that will return a higher rate. That rate's not guaranteed higher. Or if we go, one of the options is to use the State Board of Investment. Their return has been higher than the return for the short-term investments. It's, if they're getting 8, we're getting 4.
Well, Madam Chair and sir, you know the pension plans have run into problems when the market rolls, or one way or the other, and then they come back like they are now somewhat, but they're still in trouble. So that means that you can roll whatever, when you're looking for the higher return. Who bails out this plan when it's not fully funded, or however you're actuarially going to describe it?
Mr. Deans?
Madam Chair, it will have to be paid. If you're a school district, it'll have to be paid out of the funds that you've got, just like it is now. If you're a city or a county, it'll have to be paid out of that, or they'll have to raise revenue. School districts have no way to raise revenue for this. City or county, if they were short, would raise revenue, or if they're going to pay it now, they would raise revenue.
Madam Chair, I don't know whose obligation it is now if you're not you're going to pay as you go virtually if you're on short-term investments.
It's the political subdivision's liability.
And Madam Chair, well, we're going to go beyond that. I think if you mentioned the county or the state.
It is either the city, the county, or the school district's obligation. All we're allowing them to do is to invest this money the same way we would invest for a covered pension plan. The liability remains exactly the same on the political subdivision, and they're required to make these payments. They're going to pay for the retiree health insurance. It's just a question of, for instance, with a school district, because I'm more familiar with that, whether we have to increase class sizes or cut teachers or whatever to pay for these retirees, or whether we can try to offset some of that with the increased interest earnings.
Well, Madam Chair, this is for more than school boards, is it not? Isn't it for municipal employees too?
Yes. So but the same concept is the same for cities and counties. To the extent they have to pay this, no matter whether we do this or not, what the legislative auditor has recommended that you allow them to do this, because they can get a higher return, which will offset or reduce their liabilities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Earhart.
Is Larry Martin going to testify on this enormous document that we got plopped on our single space, legal size, about 5 to 6 pages?
Representative Earhart, I believe the answer would be yes, and we can provide some magnifying glasses as well if
right.
Need be.
Oh, is he here? I don't see him.
Well, Representative Earhart, why don't we wait 1 minute on there? I think Representative Mulley has a question, then we want to bring Mr. Martin or Representative Kahn up as well. So, yes. Representative Mulley, if you have a question of Mr. Deans, why don't we
do
that first?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I know school boards are very limited on what they can levy for, and can they levy for retiree health insurance right now? I didn't think that they
no,
could.
They can't.
So this would be something new then.
We
that
can't.
They
this does not provide any levy authority or funding authority in this provision.
Oh, Madam Chair, then where does it come out of? Can your state aids be used for that health?
Mr. Deans?
For retiree health?
Madam Chair, yes, you can.
Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's be clear. This is already a liability that each of these units of government already has. What this bill would do is say that rather than putting it off, because they now have to start reporting this as a liability in their reporting documents. So it already is a liability. This just says that we're allowing them to set up a fund where they can get a higher rate of return to fund it, because otherwise what's going to happen is they aren't funding them now. They're going to have to show them as a liability on their spreadsheet because of new accounting practices. So it isn't changing the liability at all. GASB 45 is requiring them to just simply show on the spreadsheet what their outstanding liability is, and now this gives them the opportunity to invest the money so that they can fund that ongoing liability that they already have.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. That's actually, I think, a very good clarification at this point. Why don't we, Representative Kahn and maybe Mr. Martin come down as well if there's no further questions of Mr. Deans. Representative Kahn, do you want to kick it off with a few comments?
Well, I know your time is limited, and I actually want to turn it over to Larry Martin. I first became concerned about this when the Duluth bill appeared before us, which we all passed, and we were told about the emergency of passing the Duluth bill, and then we worked on various things with the Duluth bill, tightened it a little bit, and then I was told, well, wait till you see this other bill that's coming along. And I think my brief comment, and I'd much rather let you have informed comments instead of my opinions, starting with Larry, is that the problems that we've had with pensions going all over the map and St. Paul and Minneapolis are nothing compared to the problems of some of the 700 other pension plans that we have in the state are just ready to be repeated to a greater extent because the health care problem is a much higher problem than the pension benefits. So I just want Mr. Martin, at my request, Larry's been working on the kinds of ways we should tighten up this bill. And
thank you, Representative Kahn. Mr. Martin, would you like to state your name for the record? And if you have a few brief comments, we'd love to hear them.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Larry Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions. And Representative Kahn asked me to take a look at House File 1160. The version of the bill I saw was the first engrossment, so all of the language that I developed for that bill, if anyone cared to pursue any of these notions, was all drawn to first engrossment, and if you were to pursue anything, you would have to make some modifications. The bill is beyond the first engrossment stage. House File 1160, as introduced, was fairly narrowly crafted to answer basically three questions. Can there be these other post-employment benefit trusts? How can these post-employee benefit trusts be managed and invested? And what happens to the OPEB trusts that have already been created? To the extent that the OPEB trusts somewhat parallel or would be analogous to the public pension plan experience in the state of Minnesota, where I have some expertise, that's the approach that I took in looking at these. Are there other factors that could or should be looked at? And looking at the experience of Minnesota public pension plans and supplemental pension plans, I then took a look at notions such as, can you create new OPEB trusts for those employers who have not already done it? Can those employers who have already set up OPEBs, can they further modify those? Can they expand them to cover new groups, or can they add new benefits? How is the actuarial work for any of these OPEB trusts to be structured? Is it wise to use outside vendors, or should we be directing these OPEB trust managements through the existing public sector rather than outside vendors? Those sorts of topics. And the memo does go through each of the items that are that popped up in connection with the bill, and I've, where appropriate, suggested some language, not necessarily because I believe it's the best crafted piece of language, but to start the conversation rolling. That was my understanding, the use of the Representative Kahn was going to put the memo to.
Great.
With
Thank
that,
you.
Members, I'd be happy to answer questions, should there be any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin. Representative Mallory has a question, and then I think this is a pretty comprehensive memo, so thank you very much for that. It probably makes more sense for members to ask questions of Mr. Martin quickly today. We have a couple other bills first, so Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Martin, you heard my concerns about, I think you were back there, about the release when you're estimated to be 100%. Is there any concern at all, or can, I mean, I've seen on the other, on the pensions, how that can sometimes create problems for us. Is there any possible problems from this release at the estimate 100% at a certain time or something like that, the actuarial?
Mr. Martin?
Madam Chair, Mr. Mullery, 100% funded is a valid notion in our public employee pension plans where we specify an actuarial method, and it has some particular meaning. There is no regulation of how the actuarial estimates or the actuarial determinations for these OPEB benefits will be conducted. There are a wide number of different actuarial methods can be used. Some of those generate some sort of number called accrued liability, where you can have assets then equal to that accrued liability be 100% funded, but not all of them do. So this is somewhat wide open in the sense that it doesn't really address that issue. It doesn't specify what 100% funded would mean. If it means when assets are equal to the present value of all future benefits promised under the plan, then it would make sense.
Representative Hillstrom, do you have any comments? Or?
Madam Chair, I would just only comment that, again, unlike with pensions are mandated and required for everyone to do. This is something that would be voluntary on the part of the local unit of government, either the city, the county, or the school district, to set up these trusts. There's nothing in law saying that they need to do this. This would give them the opportunity to invest and get a higher rate of return to fund something that they already have a liability for. Again, there is nothing in state law that says that they need to do this. And this has been going on. The previous state auditor had worked on it. Actually, Representative Biskins carried the ball on this issue for a very long time. And this is just an attempt to give them the opportunity to invest at a higher rate of return, to have an opportunity to take care of some of this liability that they already have that is already ongoing. So whether or not we do these funds, they're going to have the liability. And so they can opt to do this to get a higher rate of return, or they can opt not to. And so this is just one more tool to help get a handle on this very large outstanding obligation.
Thank you. Representative Mullery, you have another question?
Well, Madam Chair, I just thought that they are making a commitment, though, by doing this, so they are legally obligated, where they may not be obligated otherwise.
Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, they are legally obligated to fund this outstanding liability already. So this is an obligation that they have, irregardless of whether we allow them to set up the fund or not. So this just says, for those that want to be fiscally responsible, they can invest at a higher rate. There is nothing in law that says that they have to find another way to fund this. It just has to come out of the money that they have currently coming in.
Representative Kahn, you had a comment?
Well, I think as we're starting to do this, and obviously putting something in law that sets some structure, one of the things that that I'm saying is that we should follow some of the knowledge that we gained from the problems that we had with pensions, even though the pensions are legally required. Whether this is legally required when they've entered into these obligations and they have it, whether it's required by state law, it sounds like it's a legal obligation. And it seems the kinds of things that we've proposed in this memo from Mr. Martin are, I think, the reasonable things that we ought to do to deal with the problem of that people went ahead and did this without having the option of doing it. So we need to validate them, and we need to, and there seems to be some emergency, but I think we ought to put the things in place that have been suggested in this memo that would give us some more information, and it would make them think about why are they going to this outside, and what requirements there are for banks and insurance companies to offer these. Why are they doing this instead of going through PERA and the State Board of Investment, which would give them one of the best rates available? It doesn't ever say that they have to, but it does say that you have to look at it and you have to tell us why you've made this decision, not just that. insurance executive who's a member of the school board said it would be real nice to use my company to do this.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure you said this, but where are you investing your funds now? Do you have to do short term? Do you do longer term? Or?
Mr. Deans?
Madam Chair, the investments that we can make now are laid out in Chapter 118A. They're primarily certificates of deposit, banker's acceptances, commercial paper, 270 days or less. You can do GICs. You can do reverse repos and that, but they're all relatively short-term investments. And that's what we use when we're investing, you know, your day-to-day dollars, the rest of the money that's invested by the school district or cities or counties. That is, will be expended, you know, within, we get that money, we expect to expend it within a year or two. So you can't go out very far. This, we know that the obligation will run out for years.
Representative Earhart, do you have any follow-up on that?
Well, Madam Chair, is this a combined effort of all of these folks who invest in one state board pot, or each individual? I mean, the city of Minneapolis can have one for its employees, one for its school district, one for several branches of the union, and or whatever. Each city can have several. Am I trying to put these together, or?
Mr. Dean?
It's not contemplated at this time that it be done that way. If they went through the State Board of Investment, to the extent that that was in a single pool, that were through PERA to the State Board of Investment, that would be together. If they used one of the other options, they would not do it that way. They would do them individually if they used the insurance company or if they used a bank with trust powers. That would be their determination. There will be a report coming back that will be required by the state auditor that shows the rate of return and shows the fees that are charged. And she specifically asked for that language so that it would be transparent and it would be allow comparability, so that people would know if you were getting a better deal by going through the State Board of Investment. Those folks all have election certificates too. And people come and say to them, why are you investing in a lower, something that's getting a lower yield? We believe they'll change.
And, Madam Chair, you're limited by law in the vehicles in which you can invest now.
That's correct.
Okay.
Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Martin, I can't read this quick. As we've talked, I don't like to go back on longstanding commitments we've had, like with pension funds on different allowing them to invest in different ways. But is this pretty tight, or is this pretty open on who they can invest with? Where are we on this? The bill that's apparently.
Mr. Mullery, I'm not sure I necessarily follow the question. Is the bill as drafted?
Yes. The bill that's currently moving.
Mr. Martin.
Madam Chair, my understanding, the bill as drafted specifies that, well, Mr. Deans as the opponent would be better, but it does tie it to the State Board of Investment or the current municipal investment authorization language, one or the other.
Okay.
All right. Is my reading.
Okay. Any last questions for Mr. Martin or Representative Hillstrom? Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, are we going to take a look at this amendment that's been offered, or is that drafted to the wrong bill now? What did you say?
Representative Earhart, we don't have this bill in our possession, so we can't move into any amendments. I think this was informational from what I understand. But I would encourage members to take a look at the memo and follow up with Representative Hillstrom and Mr. Martin and Representative Kahn if you have questions along the road, because it is a pretty comprehensive memo. And
well, Madam Chair, are you expecting us to next see this on the House floor or what?
Well, Representative Earhart, I think I'm going to defer to Representative Lunchesky on that on that question.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Earhart. And I'm a little confused about it, too. Representative Hillstrom, I erroneously had you move the bill and then was told by her staff that we don't have possession of the bill. So we do not have the possession of this bill. My understanding is we are being asked to have it, to consider it for the omnibus public finance bill. It is in the possession of finance, so I believe it will be coming here. We'll get possession. At that time, we'll be able to act on amendments and vote to put it in or not in the omnibus public finance bill. So I apologize for that, because I did not know that we didn't have possession of it. So we are hearing it informationally now, but I do think it's going to be considered in this committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus public finance bill.
Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I did state this, but not everyone was in the room. Currently, it is in the state government finance bill, which Representative Kahn carries. In the Senate, it is in the tax bill. And so there is leadership will be deciding where this bill will be conferred. And so in the event they decide that the tax committee is going to conferee it, it would not be fair if you all hadn't had the opportunity to get the memo, to see the bill, to hear the issue, to understand both sides. So that decision will be made, you know, much higher than my pay grade, and so this is informational for you.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I think they get paid the same. They just do different work. But Representative Kahn, a little bit extra. Representative Kahn, did you have any comments?
They get a leadership differential, which we've occasionally tried to take away, but we didn't do it this year. we usually try and take it away after they've been in the position for a few years. You know,
Representative Kahn, that's something that we can work on together.
But
then
the question, that suddenly raises, what's the omnibus public finance bill? I don't know about that. That's something
that. Have you been here?
Well, Representative Lunchesky, I think this is a groundbreaking thing that you get to give Representative Kahn some history.
Is this a euphemism for a tax bill?
And Madam Chair, I didn't know there wasn't a thing that Representative Kahn didn't know. So I'm delighted to tell her that the tax committee almost always has an omnibus public finance bill, and it is carried to the floor after the tax bill. And it is sometimes then sent to the tax conference committee to be conferred there, and sometimes not. I believe the Senate has already done their omnibus public finance bill, and they have incorporated it into their omnibus tax bill, and it is in the possession of Senator Bach. We, on the other hand, decided to do them separately. I had made that decision in January to tell members with public finance bills that we would not listen to their bills until after we had finished the omnibus tax bill. So.
Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
He's going to tell you that there are lots of things that Representative
That's very true.
This Andy Pasco played.
She didn't even. She went to every Brooklyn Dodgers game, and she didn't even know. She was telling me that Andy Pasco was playing long after he had Nola, and here I knew it. She didn't even know what she was watching. But I was wondering if Mr. Michael could tell us how many times Representative Kahn has voted on the public finance bill.
Representative Mullery, Mr. Michael is good, but I'm sure he doesn't have that information here. But Representative Kahn probably will be researching that going forward. But why don't we move on to the next bill? But thank you, Representative Hillstrom and Kahn and Mr. Martin and Mr. Deans for your testimony. Members, we're going to do House File 2268. Representative Lunchesky, if you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2268. And Madam Chair, members, Mr. Endorf is here to go through the bill. Members, and then I also have a testifier from my city who has interested in a provision in this bill. And so I'd like to bring him up later, but I just want to remind members that the process typically in the public finance bill, it's brought forward by the folks who are working in this area, the practitioners in public finance, and this bill is sponsored by the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance, In the past, my recollection is that previous tax chairs have taken out provisions that members had a problem with. So that would be my intention, to listen to what people may or may not object to within the bill itself. But if we can, Madam Chair, I just would ask that Mr. Endorf walk us through the bill. Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Endorf, if you'd state your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Lynn Endorf, Madam Chair. I am the Legislative Vice President of the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. And I will start going through this section by section. I invite questions as we go along.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Endorf.
Section 1, a relatively simple provision that removes the requirement to provide on public deposits by public bodies to provide collateral for accrued but not yet paid interest. Political subdivisions are required to provide collateral on deposit, or depositories of political subdivisions are required to provide collateral for deposits that exceed federal deposit limits. Section 1 of this particular provision says exactly that. You have to provide collateral on deposits that at the end of the business day of the depository exceed the federal deposit insurance limits. The problem is Subdivision 3 requires, in addition to the deposit at the end of the day, collateral on accrued interest. It comes up where you have a $100,000 deposit, for example. You don't have to collateralize it, but under this provision, the law seems to require that every time you accrue a dollar of interest above the $100,000, you've got to provide collateral for that interest portion, but not the deposit.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, just a quick question. Why wouldn't we want that collateralized as the interest accrues over years?
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I think the question is whether we should, we have a provision here that's inconsistent, is I think the point. We have a provision that requires the deposit, an initial one that requires a deposit whenever you exceed the federal deposit, and it says the amounts on deposit at the end of the business day. We have a second provision that says that the amount of the collateral has to be in the amount of the deposit at the end of the business day plus accrued interest. We're trying to make this work.
Mr. Endorf, go ahead and actually, I think what we should probably do is just let you walk through the bill, and then we'll follow up with questions. I think that'll be a little easier.
Okay. Section 2. Over the last few years, we have been dealing with certificates for purchase of equipment by various municipalities. One of the things we've done is allow them to borrow up to 10 years, assuming that the equipment that they're buying has a useful life at least equal to 10 years. A few of our municipalities got left out in the past. This is an attempt to get school boards on board with 10 years, so long as they have a useful life of at least 10 years. Section 3 deals with elections. And currently, where you have an election conducted by mail, you can not have more than two questions voted on at that election. Many of our outstate, particularly school districts, want to do mail elections because of the distances that people have to cover. And oftentimes, they want to have, for example, two bond questions plus a levy referendum question. This prohibits them from doing that. And we would like to strike the limitation on the number of questions. Section 4, technical provision. We have a provision that says that if you're giving notice of public hearing or other type of event, If it's not otherwise specified in statute, it can't occur more than 14 days prior to the event. We have some provisions that other provisions of law that require that you give 14 days or more. This is a problem if we try to combine two public hearing notices, for example, two public hearings on different statutes, combine them together, and you one of them requires more than 14 days notice. So we're only increasing the amount of notice from 14 to 30 days. Sections 5 through 8, I'll talk about them together because they're all related. It amends the township subordinate service district law to allow, for one thing, to allow the creation of special service districts by action of the town board. Currently, town's subordinate service districts, unlike counties, can only be created by a petition by property owners. This would allow the town board to initiate it. It doesn't change the rest of the provisions, the hearings, and reverse referendum provisions that apply. It just allows the town board to do it on its own initiative. And it also allows for the issuance of bonds by townships secured by revenues from the subordinate service district. So that takes us through Section 8. Section 9 is there are a couple of provisions in here that would remove the sunset that currently exists on the ability to issue certificates of indebtedness or capital notes for software. That provision's been in the bill for quite a number of years. It keeps moving forward 2 years at a time, and we're suggesting that we just remove it at this point. Section 10 deals with county subordinate service district bonds, allows for the issuance of bonds by counties to fund improvements in special service districts secured by the special service district charges. Section 11, Hennepin County has its own capital note equipment provision. We missed that when we increased the permissible limit on maturity from 5 to 10 years, and we also missed them when we had computer software added a few years ago. Section 12, that's a removal of sunset for home rule charter cities on issuing certificates to purchase software. Section 13 is the similar provision, removes the sunset on software for statutory cities. Section 14 is the city special service district law. This would allow you to include residential property as part of a special service district and impose charges on residential property, which you currently cannot do. Section 15, that's really not an Institute of Public Finance matter, but we might want to talk about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Oxley. I'm with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, and Section 15 is ours. That section would merely conform the laws concerning municipal gas agencies with the laws concerning municipal power agencies and allowing cities outside the state of Minnesota to participate in the in the municipal gas agency with regards to membership and voting and everything else. It's done in many states and shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Oxley. Any questions for Mr. Oxley while he's here? Thank you very much. Mr. Endorf, do you want to continue?
Yes. Section 16 and 17 of the bill have to do with allowing the issuance of so-called Garvey bonds, that is, bonds issued in anticipation of federal transportation grant money. If you have an executed grant agreement with the Federal Transportation Administration, you'll be able to issue obligations to to anticipate those grants.
And Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I request Councilmember Elkins from my city, City of Bloomington, is here, and he's one of the folks who brought this to my attention, has worked with the League of Minnesota Cities this year to address this issue. And if you would permit, Mr. Councilmember Elkins, to just say a few words on this, I'd appreciate it.
Please. Great. Please state your name for the record, too.
Steve Elkins. I'm a council member in Bloomington.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins.
And a member of the National League of Cities Transportation Committee and the Minnesota League of Cities Improving Local Economies Committee, which has jurisdiction over transportation issues. I've been working with Minnesota League staff on this one. I actually learned about this provision in federal law at an NLC conference a few years ago. Federal Transportation Funding Bill, the current version of which is called Safe T-Lou, has a provision that allows local governments, state and local governments, to borrow against committed grants. However, state enabling legislation is also required, and that's what this would provide. And the reason that it's needed, using the Twin Cities as an example, federal gas tax money coming into the Twin Cities region is distributed by the Met Council and its Transportation Advisory Board. Every other year, the Met Council's Transportation Advisory Board does a grant solicitation to cities and counties in the Twin Cities region. And this, for example, is an application year. So this year, cities and counties will be making applications in July for projects such as American Boulevard in Bloomington, the 28th Avenue Park and Ride, projects like that. The Met Council, the CAB, and the Met Council will evaluate the grant applications, make a list of the grant applicants that will be funded. The successful applicants will have their grants included into the into MnDOT State Transportation Improvement Program. At that point, the funds are committed, and that will be about a year from now, March or April of 2008. Except that those funds will be for money that can not be spent until 2011-2012. Okay. So what we're trying to do here is that that the federal enabling law says that once it's in the state traffic and transportation improvement program, the funds are considered committed. Nobody's ever had committed funds in the STIF removed. You would be able to issue a Garvey bond against your committed grant so that you could advance your program by a year, 2 years, probably 3 years at the most, in order to solve a pressing local need. I'll give you a couple of examples of where this would have come in handy for Bloomington. We had projects that were funded to do American Boulevard Bridge over 35W here, Lindale Avenue about a block away, but the funds to do the segment of road in between weren't available under this process until a year later. So we did the two ends and then came back a year later and had to tear up the road in between because the funds for the two ends were in this period, and the funds for the section in the middle were a period later. So this is more about flexibility and just having the opportunity to line up projects in a more sensical way.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Elkins? Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Endor.
The last section, the street reconstruction law that we enacted a few years ago, the important part of this is we're proposing to require only that a vote of all of the members, a unanimous vote of the members present at the meeting to approve the issuance of bonds. It now reads a unanimous vote of all members. And that's it.
Okay. Ms. Honey, did you have a testimony note?
Just here for support, huh?
Just here for support, Madam Chair. I'm Kathy Hottie from Fager and Benson. We represent the Institute. So if you have a softball question, I'd be happy to take it otherwise.
Well,
Mr. Endorf is
thank you very much, Ms. Hani. And Representative Lincheski, any other testifiers? Representative Dabney has a question or a softball to throw.
more a confusion, so
okay.
Chair.
Representative Dabney.
If the testifier could talk about Section 14, what's the rationale for including residential property in these special service districts? And I guess, given what I hopefully misunderstand about what you're doing in townships and taking the petition out.
Well,
like I said, hopefully misunderstand. what you're saying. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the extension of these special service districts for residential property, if I understand what's going on there. I just wondering if you could talk broadly about what you're trying to do here.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Ender.
Representative. The city's subordinate service district or special service district law doesn't now allow you to include residential properties. The idea is to make this available for mixed use properties. Right now you're only commercial industrial, so the idea is to be able to include residential in there. And on the township, we are not eliminating the petition. That we're giving an alternate way of doing this, and there is a reverse referendum provision that applies whether it's a petition or initiated by the town board.
Representative Dabney,
could you speak, sir, more to then? I'm getting more comfortable with. I was wondering if this was a condo thing, which I think for the cities that's probably what it is. Is you've now got commercial industrial space mixed in with residential space, and you need to adapt for that. What's the process for establishing then these special service districts in the cities currently? Is it a petition? Because this is essentially becomes an assessment to the property owners, does it not?
Mr. Ender.
It does. And it's like the counties and what I'm proposing for the town, it can be done either by petition or by motion of the governing body. Resolution of the governing body, and it does have a reverse referendum provision.
Representative Dabney, any other questions?
No, thank you very much.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at section.
I'm sorry, Representative Demmer, I couldn't find you.
Oh.
You're sitting right in front of me.
Well, I had my back turned to you, too. So I'm looking at Section 2, the purchase of equipment, and authorizing to go to 10 years on these notes. The thing that comes to my mind is buying short-term equipment with long-term money. Who makes the decision about the length of the notes? Computers typically been around for 10 years. I don't think it's good.
Mr. Ender.
The second requirement there is that the equipment purchased must have a useful life at least equal to the term of the obligations, so that if you buy a fire truck that has a long-term life,
right,
or if you buy a fire truck and a computer, and the average useful life of the two pieces of equipment that you're buying is at least 10 years, then you can go 10 years. If it's 8 years, you can only go 8 years.
Representative Demmer, follow up?
Going to 10 years, is there a certain piece of equipment that's particularly targeted towards to be able to go that? I don't see anything else here that would go more than 5 years. Maybe a vehicle.
I think vehicles, yes. Okay. Are the likely thing.
And who monitors that particular requirement? Is that the board themselves responsible for that? Is that their responsibility? Is there...
It's
Mr. Ender?
Bond counsel?
Madam Chair, yes, bond counsel. Typically, okay. It's stuck with that.
Great. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, do you have any final comments, Representative Lincheski?
I'll only say that we can discuss these pieces further than when we do the omnibus public finance bill, because I do think the capital, just speaking for me, the software piece is always questionable, and I think we need to talk about whether or not we want to do that one. But I do think the special service district, Representative Dabney brought that up. That's one I've actually thought. Everybody has different views on these special service districts. I actually think they end up helping the residential property taxpayers not end up paying for things that are really only going to service a few properties. So I think they're generally a good tool for local units of government, where if there's a certain area, whether it's mixed use or something else, that wants to buy a bunch of stuff, then they can pay for it, as opposed to the whole city. So we could have a further discussion on that, too, or any other part next time we meet.
All right. With that, House File 2268 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Public Finance Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Members, with that, we'll do the next bill of Representative Lincheski's at the next meeting. With that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.